This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
Blessed be the fruit. Dave.
Rog.
Feeling very aroused today.
You are?
Yeah.
That's not what you were just saying.
Oh, it's my outfit. Do you like?
Yeah. Let me paint a picture for you out there in radio land.
Would you?
Roger's wearing a onesie.
Yeah.
It's a black Adidas, very stylish onesie. It has a DC United crest on it.
It was sent into our People's History of American Soccer Hall of Fame by a JFOP, Jay Hinton.
Yeah.
1996. They gave all of the goalkeepers, you know, MLS always breaking ground, doing the penalty shootout if there's a tie. Great idea. Having a clock, what was it, count down rather than up. Great idea.
Yeah.
But perhaps MLS's greatest founding idea
was
that all goalkeepers, Miola, etc.
Yeah. Oh, Miola in a onesie. How they all had onesies. How do you get Miola in a onesie?
You know, goalkeepers always get the groupies. How do you make them even cooler?
Oh, put them in a onesie.
Jam them in a onesie.
Yeah.
And so, for our museum, which is collecting all the ephemera of American soccer history, this gentleman, Jay Hinton, clearly in his basement, because I smell of mothballs or death. Someone has either died in this or this has been stored by something rather stale and musty.
That's fairly close to your regular smell.
It's as tight as a chastity belt. I've kind of jammed myself into this. My down belows I've lost touch with. But I'm podding in this state of near ecstasy. In a onesie. I'm going to always pod in a onesie from now on. But while we're talking about this, we've got serious stuff to... I've got to say to you, Dave, I'll look you in the eye and say, Mazel tov, mate.
Your team have won the title. You've never meant anything less genuinely.
True.
These have been the most...
True.
Every text, every email, every... Oh, I've got to look you in the eye and say this. The most disingenuous congratulations in the history of one friend congratulating another friend.
This is ingenuous, mate, if that's a word.
What?
But before we get into all of that, this insignificant frippery, I do want to talk to you about life matters of substance and life import. I said last week that I wanted a particular bite, a Devo quote, from your mouth turned into my answer phone ringtone.
Yeah.
And one GFOP, one wolf.
Rog Bennett.
Obliged.
Rog Bennett. Rog Bennett spent all weekend doing it.
It's another person.
Rog,
great
honestly,
GFOP.
There is no limit to your darkness. I know you spent all weekend doing it. It's okay. It's fine. I know this amuses you.
But no, one wolf, and you know you're a human being who's not me. You sent us this. Take a listen.
Chelsea are the most evil entity in the world.
And when I heard that, Davo,
my
first reaction was, what an amazing set of listeners we have that they create such remarkable nuggets of culture.
Rog.
But then, then my second instinct, Davo, was I just broke down, fell to my knees, rent my shirt, felt a darkness descend. And I want to apologise, Davo, because I realised...
This is even more disingenuous than the congratulations.
Look at me. Do you need me to get on my knees? Do you need me to flog myself, like, with put on horsehair and just beat myself with a... Maybe I should. A onesie whip. But
whenever you're lying to me, there's a little vein in your very skinny head that pops up, and it's popped up right now.
That's the onesie. It's having a certain effect. It's cutting off the blood flow. I've wronged you, Davo. Just minutes after Chelsea won the title, what should have been euphoric seconds of your life, you just turned around to me and you said, Rog, you have impugned my character by painting Chelsea as the embodiment of evil. You said to me, Davo, said sometimes when GFOPs meet you, as they do around the city, around the country, they have the impression that because I have proclaimed Chelsea to be the root of all evil, that by association, you too, Michael Davis, are also associated with darkness, with evil. And if that's true, I do want to apologise because it does make me feel terrible.
Well, no, I mean, I think the vast majority of our GFOPs, and certainly all of my friends and the people that matter to me, just realise it's your own darkness speaking. And so the only way you can cope with a team that I care about so much less than you care about your seventh-placed Everton, but the only way you can really deal with their success in what has been, frankly, over
this
the last 13 years, the Chelsea era. This has been the era of Chelsea, and it's the era in which we met has been the Chelsea era. The only way you can deal with it is to impugn them with that it's pure evil, that this is about evil winning. So I may be winning, but we are worse than Hitler.
All true.
that is, and I'm sure, and make that, you can spend all weekend turning that into your ringtone too.
On par
that
with.
It was, that therefore it makes you worse. Feel better, which doesn't actually make you feel better. It just makes you feel, makes you have company in your darkness if other people can go and do that. But Men in Blazers, which is something that I used to love. I used to love the Men in Blazers. I used to love the Men in Blazers Twitter. Men in Blazers Twitter itself has become our Instagram, has become the home of Chelsea is evil. There are Chelsea fans who follow Men in Blazers.
A lot.
There are Chelsea fans.
And they identify themselves
whenever
to be all
see
over
me,
the city.
Whenever
all
they see
the
me,
city, they
they'll be
they
like,
say hello, I mean.
What do you think when Rog tweets all of this of Men in Blazers? I'm like, it's just the darkness speaking. It's just the darkness speaking. It's the only way Rog knows how to deal with the pain. It's like everybody has that friend in their group of friends who wants you to fail all your exams, wants the girlfriend to break up with you, wants bad things to happen to you. It's just
not
what you're
that
like.
Person.
A little bit that person.
A lot that person.
Quite a lot that person.
Yeah, fair enough. I'll be candid. I've thought about this all weekend. I honestly had no idea that anyone took anything that comes out of my mouth mildly seriously, number one. Number two, I do want to look you in the eye and apologise to you, Michael Davis, for the pain I've caused you and the incredible cross that you've had to bear as a result.
No, you can't say these things with a smile on your face, Rog. If you're going to even try... By the way, there's no way that you can make this genuine because it's not genuine. But if you're going to try and fake a genuine apology, you have to do it without smiling. You're going to go home and work on that in front of the mirror.
Well, I wanted to say what? I'm going to pretend that you said, I forgive you, Rog.
Which I don't.
But I'm going to pretend you did.
Yeah.
Because... when I think about you, of your many qualities, and there's many wonderful qualities, in all seriousness, the one I admire most, Dave, yeah. You are one of the single most forgiving men that I know. And I do not forgive. If EA Sports FIFA had ratings for forgiving, how much a player forgives other human beings, my rating would probably be about... it would be a Brad Guzan's attacking rating, probably, up there as a par. Your rating would be 93 or above.
That's
Adam,
not
you're
actually
so good at it.
Not actually one of my qualities, forgiveness. My quality is tolerance, Rog. And so I'll tolerate things for a very, very long time. But at the point that it comes that it's broken, I never forgive.
You
never.
I've seen you be so forgiving, though, mate. I've seen you.
But you don't forgive all sorts of people. You don't forgive all sorts of people.
I'm awful.
You casually don't forgive. I don't care about those ones. Those kind of things, it's not about forgiveness, it's about tolerance. People don't push me to a level where I have to forgive. But at the point that you've pushed me to a level where I have to forgive, almost never given.
The black book, the David Black book is thin.
It's thin.
Written in ink.
Yeah.
In blood.
Stone.
And stone carved in.
It is.
Can we talk before about this? There's those who look at the world or people being good until they prove themselves to be bad. And I think I approach everyone as if they're bad till they prove they're good. It's all the Cossacks' fault, David. I always hear their footsteps. If I'm wrong, I can never shake it. I can never forget a slight, Davey. Forgiveness, it's just not a muscle that I have, no matter how hard. It's awful. It is awful. But that's the secret that you're passing on to me.
Well, you tend to see evil intentions. You tend to see malintent in all people, whereas I tend to see inefficiency or ineptitude. And so it's malintent is much harder to forgive. If you believe that people, if you believe constantly, if you're on the lookout for evil... which is what you see. Whereas what I tend to see is ineptitude.
Stupidity.
Yeah, you don't go to a level of forgiving. It goes to a level of tolerance where you tolerate ineptitude. You don't find it, like, unforgivable.
Oh, Gandhi, who's a GFOP, once said, the weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. I've been thinking a lot about that this week, Dave. I mean, he's right. I am so very weak.
Yeah.
Incredibly. Talking about the weak. Men in Blazers. Season finale. Oh, God, airs this Sunday, coincidentally when the season itself runs its course, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time on NBC Sports. It's been a magical year, and we are going to relive every single Phil Jagielka goal in its entirety many times in our end-of-season review, because that's clearly the highlights that America wants to see. And if you can't get enough of us, we're also, and this fills me with happiness, we are in EA Sports FIFA 2017 game now.
Oh.
Which is genuinely amazing.
Yes, Rog, in May, all eligible FUT Champions Club members will receive one Men in Blazers kit.
Oh, that thrills me. No end. I mean, EA Sports have dropped our Men in Blazers national team jersey, the world's first ever tweed jersey, into their game with matching shorts and socks for FUT players.
Can you reach into the game and take it out and actually wear it?
Why don't you try it?
Okay, I'll try that.
Because you get Sony flat screen televisions just given to you.
Sony is still working on that technology.
You should try it, like at the beginning of the Terminator when he just puts his hand deep inside the heart of one of his enemies and rips it out. Try it just like that. That jersey doesn't exist outside of our imagination and the imagination of thousands of GFOPs across the country. And it now lives for real in the game we love, Dave. I say America, oh, it's where dreams come true, even when they're dreamed of by lunatics like me. Talking about lunatics like me. Warning, Washington DC GFOPs in your city, take cover. A week today at US Soccer Foundation's Capital Soccer Classic. This sounds like a surreal event. I mean, just when you thought DC couldn't get any worse, I am coming to it along with Congressman, both Democratic, Davo, and Republican. Yes, soccer unites, Davo. Yep. Doesn't soccer just unite all sides? They're going to play against each other on hallowed turf at RFK. I'm trying to get J-Dubs to come down with his tree stump legs and just trot onto that field.
Catamol.
That'd be amazing.
Studs up.
That'd be amazing.
It's watching the only tackle he knows.
Watching this happy event just to do a lot of good work for charity.
By Williamson running around the pitch and sliding in with the two-footed studs
Rob
up challenge.
Rob Stone's going to be there. Yeah. Chris Cazilla is going to be there. He's going to pop on his cleats. I can imagine myself just happily drinking the beer tent dry. And then I can imagine, it's a free event, by the way, on the 23rd. Come out, hang out, support an amazing cause, promoting the game we love in deserving low-income areas. I can just imagine being there, Dave, maybe four or five Guinnesses in, and then there'll be a curdling child scream, and I'll just catch J-Dubs just charging forward, leaving the ground, two-footed, just nailing some congressman.
You'll just catch him. That will be every moment of JW on the field. It's the only game he knows. Player's going to play.
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
Okay.
23rd, God love you, Washington, D.C. Virginia people can come too. And okay. You Marylanders.
We got a packed show. We're going to douse ourselves up from West Virginia. You can get down there from Pennsylvania. Lots of places you can get into.
It's like the worst Beach Boys song of all time.
I wish we could all be in Pennsylvania.
Virginia, Bethesda. Ooh, I want to Maryland ya. Go on.
We got a packed show. We're going to douse ourselves in Guinness while recapping. Well, I'll douse myself in Guinness. I've frankly still doused in Guinness while recapping Chelsea's 2016-17 Premier League title clinching win over West Brom and some of the strangest, celebrations of all time, even by Diego Costa standards. We wave goodbye to White Hart Lane after 118 years and we break down the race for the final two top four spots, plus Champions League, MLS, and news of the US-led 2026 World Cup bid being fast-tracked to the football, Rog.
Oh, let me get hold of this Guinness. I've really needed a Guinness like I do right now, David. It's the onesie effect.
I love it that it's in a Watch What Happens Live Muzzle pint glass as well. That's perfect. It's two worlds coming together.
Oh, what an odd season it's been, David. I've been thinking about this week. I mean, imperious for the velvet fist that is Conte's Chelsea. Mm. But I've really watched a season in which so many of the other team's fan bases all feel frustration at best. Mm. Deep concern bordering on misery at worst. I mean, Spurs, a season of wonder. But their fans can't believe they've not won it again. City United, not happy. Liverpool fans merely kind of discombobulated and confused. Arsenal fans, see Arsenal Fan TV. Everton fans always dreaming of something higher under the new ownership of Farhad Moshiri. On and on, down the table. I think the only happiness to be found is at Swansea and Palace. Happiness masking relief of bullets dodged, celebratory pies eaten, arguably also at Bournemouth. And as we approach the end of one season, Davo, I'm going to raise my Guinness and say to you, more happiness in the year ahead.
We're now between 36 and 37, 38 of the way through the Premier League season. Somewhere in West London, renowned Chelsea fan and club ambassador, English Beef, Rog, is well into what promises to be a week-long pie-fueled bender. He's already got his start. Chelsea officially clinched the league Friday night at West Brom, seeing off a stubborn Tony Pulis side. Is there any other kind, Rog? 1-0. It was an 82nd-minute goal from who else? Substitute Mishi Batshuayi.
Substitute
job.
Hero legend.
Yeah, he can't stop scoring. The celebration started at the final whistle and lasted through Monday's John Terry-infused 4-3 win over Watford at Stamford Bridge. Let's hop in the George Michael sports machine, head back to Friday night, Rog. Put your gal.
What a night, Davo, under the crackling floodlights of the Hawthorns. A true managerial clash that we really have dreamt of all season. Antonio Conte looking to lock up his fourth title in 4 years. Amazing. Yeah. And Tony Pulis. His team, they might not have scored a home goal in 4 games before kickoff. Lost 3 of them on the trot. But you give that man a chance to ruin thousands of people's happiness around the world. And mark my words, Tony Pulis is always going to want to try and piss in the punch. And so West Brom unfurled 83 minutes of what amounted to Pulis porn. 5 across the back. Chelsea set up siege 4/5 of the way up the field, with Rondon occasionally pulling a jailbreak. Really, it was all about Chelsea versus exhaustion and adrenaline and the Great Wall of West Brom. As the clock ticked on, Davo, the game became edgier. It was like an attack versus defence drill, but that drill was being watched by millions around the world, with the future of democracy arguably pending the result. Did you ever doubt victory?
Yeah, of course. Unfortunately, I had to leave at halftime, so I couldn't watch anymore and had to run back to get to my apartment to go and pick something up. And then the traffic was so bad, I couldn't get back in time to go and see the second half.
It's all the West Brom fans trying to catch so those I was walking, 7 minutes.
So I was walking back from Soho and literally stopped at a bar in Soho and watched as Batshuayi knocked in that goal.
Was the Pogues Fairy Tale of New York playing on the jukebox? Perfect moment.
Yeah, in hindsight. and that was that. Yeah, I mean, look, at this point, I wasn't worried about winning the title, but I wondered whether it was going to happen away at the Hawthorns on Friday night.
Jewish Sabbath ball.
And in the end, how appropriate for Antonio Conte that it was a change he made in a season of changes that won that match.
Yeah, I mean, it was fascinating, Davo. 74th minute, Conte, double sub, Willian and Batshuayi.
Bats, you can just call him Bats.
I mean, when he came on, Davo, I turned around to J-Dubs and we just looked at each other and we were like, oh no. Oh no, Premier League writers. Don't stop it. I mean, don't even think about making Bats the hero.
You did a gag about Bats in the TV show a couple of weeks ago.
When he was subbed off after a hapless... start.
And you said, and so the era of Batshuayi at Chelsea has come to an end.
The great Batshuayi
era. The curse of Rog. Come to an end. Cursed Rog.
But, I mean, $43 million, no goals in his last 15 games.
Yeah.
And it turns out, Conte never doubted Bats.
No.
Just wanted to save all of his energies for that very critical last moment, Davo.
Yeah.
Relive it for me.
Well, it was an odd Chelsea goal, but in a season of what have been, there have been many odd Chelsea goals. Have we ever seen a season of more goals? I mean, we've never talked about corner scraps before this season, and this wasn't corner scraps, it was Cahill scraps, which is some sort of derivation of corner scraps.
Yeah, I mean, wow, Gary Cahill. Cahill, I was going to say, even his fart's a goal plated.
Oh, my word,
season.
He whiffed this sensationally, so sensationally. It was almost like a trick shot where he managed to make the ball go sideways, slower than you'd think that object could actually move through the air, spin backwards in a way that felt like not entirely real. It was almost whiffily.
Gary Cahill's top bins.
And the ball breaks to Dave Azpilicueta. Of course, Dave playing right down by the byline.
Total
where
football.
Where else would Dave?
Total football.
Dave, Conte has turned him into a centre-back this season who seems to spend most of his time on the edge of the area scoring amazing goals or on the byline making crosses for winners. He puts the ball in. And Batshuayi, frankly, very good finish. Gets in there and cleans it all up, puts it away.
His third shot on target all season.
He's only played about 11 minutes.
I have rarely seen an athlete so deep down the bowels of the depth chart instantly write himself into club lore. It was like watching Yankee bench warmer Aaron Boone hit that walk-off home run in Game 7 of the 2003 ALCS. I mean, on the sideline, Conte went bonkers. I still love the description that John Oliver delivered about Conte on our show. He said, Antonio Conte is just about every Italian stereotype to an almost offensive extent. And there he was on the sideline, acting as if someone, probably John Terry, had put fire ants in his Speedo. Whenever I watch Conte explode with joy, David, and relief, and we've had many, many opportunities to watch that this season,
yeah.
I do think of Vince Lombardi's quote, when you get into the end zone, act like you've been there before, and how it clearly was never translated into Italian.
Well, he does. He is consistent. He does do it in exactly the same way every single time.
And they do seem to have got a little bit bigger as the season. They're moving towards a crescendo. He understands opera. He's moving into the final act, and they seem to have got larger. You made an interesting point, though, saying that rarely is a player so far down the depth chart. I think some of the genius of Conte is that I'm not sure that Batts ever felt way down the depth chart, because he was actually the number two choice at striker. But just when Costa wasn't playing, he would readjust and play Hazard in the lone role, or played Willian there, I think, once this season. Batts always felt like he was going to get a shot this season. He was always training, always trained hard, because he feels, I'm just one shot away from going and doing it. And look, if your subs are ready, they come on. Wow.
Even when Conte had him peeling the potatoes in the Chelsea canteen, he still felt that his moment was around the corner. He's going to be fantastic for Sunderland next season. But at the final...
That's just the sadness speaking, Roger. It's okay. It's just the darkness. It's just the sadness.
I've got to find a way to counter this. I've got a way to destroy me.
It's not... It's okay.
It's not about me.
He can play at Chelsea and you can still feel good about yourself. He doesn't have to be a disaster for you to be happy.
Talking about still being at Chelsea. Okay. At the final whistle, Diego Costa tried to steal the limelight by doing everything from playing with John Terry's bottom to pouring Gatorade into his own eyes and then walking around menacingly with a fire extinguisher under his arm.
What for 1 minute makes you think that this isn't how Diego Costa behaves all the time? That he's not playing. We only really see the cameras on him when he's playing football. I imagine the way Diego Costa was behaving after the game is how I imagine he behaves all the time. Adam Carolla told a story on the TV show we're making the other day about his friend Ray, that when they were young guys, he grew up with this guy Ray, that they would had this whole saying amongst them, don't tell Ray. And they all wore T-shirts and sweatshirts that said, don't tell Ray. It's because Ray was such a nightmare when he went out to parties. He would bogwash everybody, put their heads down the toilets, throw people in swimming pools, wedgie them. He would like egg their cars. He would toilet paper their houses.
This is what whenever
they were going anywhere to have fun, it was all, don't tell Ray, don't tell Ray. I imagine that Diego is the same way.
I imagine Diego is Ray and then some. I imagine being at the party, having a great time. You're looking around, everyone's enjoying themselves. And then you look over in the corner and there's Diego just clicking into place on his shoulder as a surface-to-air missile. And you can just tell it's about to go off.
Fun.
That's what I mean. Despite that, Davo, looking at him, I mean, a very brave man prodding away really rather assertively at John Terry's buttocks. I thought, go and prod away. You deserve it. Because how it must have felt to be you, Diego Costa, or Hazard, or Cesc, Davo, venerated one season, winners, then caught up in Mourinho's scorched earth, despised by all and sundry a year later, only to be re-energised, reborn, re-everything by Conte and led back to the promised land. I mean, they have experienced these three stars, feast, famine, and then feast again. And football, oh, like life, what an emotional waltzer. And ultimately, looking at it, I realised your team, these players, each of them, because it really was each of them, Davo, they showed the value that you most love in humans. Bounce back ability,
hugely. But you can't do it without a leader, without somebody inspiring you to do it. And look, there are so many achievements of Antonio Conte this season, taking a team that were on top and then went down to 10th in the Premier League, and frankly only got to 10th at the end of the season with an amazing run that got them there. And players, as you said, completely lack confidence, vilified by, you know, virtually everyone in the media and a lot of Chelsea fans as well, a lot of people. You know, I imagine, you know, behind the scenes at Chelsea, you know, very disappointed.
Said to be gone many times.
And their role, lost form, playing really terrible football, a shadow of who they'd been before, certainly the case with Eden Hazard. He's got a performance out of them, but you almost look around that Chelsea team. A lot has been made about, oh, he took Victor Moses, who was just a journeyman Premier League footballer and turned him into something great. You know, changed almost the positional play of everyone.
Sunderland reject.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of players you wouldn't have thought so.
Gary Cahill.
Yeah, taught him to put the ball in both ends.
Not having a brain is not a handicap.
No, exactly.
It can be overcome.
David Luiz, seen as a joke, had him play in the centre and became their most solid defender. I mean, just all across the park, he just had achievements with players. Courtois got his confidence back and, you know, played very, very good football this season. You know, lots of achievements, you know, throughout the team. And Antonio's hand is behind every single one of them. Of course, this would not have happened. It was the perfect season for it to happen, as, you know, many have made the point. I was just reading Gab Marcotti's article about this. it almost required not being in Europe for him to be able to spend that amount of time working with the players and going and doing it. This was a great season to not be in Europe for Chelsea, and it's one of the reasons that they were able to keep on going.
No distractions, injuries. Clear, organised schedule, able to really, really focus. I picked them pre-season, David, Chelsea, to win this title, just as you predicted the season before, that Mourinho's Chelsea would be out at the top four the year before. And I re-listened to our pre-season pod where we did our predictions. And I did. I said in that pod, I believed in Conte, having watched him at Siena and then beyond with Juventus in Italy, his will to win. I mean, at the time I said, God, if that man can totally take a bald head that he had and sprout that thick, verdant undergrowth on top, holy crap, man, he can do anything. And they have done it. And the fans recognise that, because at the final whistle, they were bellowing Antonio, Antonio, the man the Italians call Il Martello, the hammer. He struggled briefly to adapt to the helter-skelter world of the Premier League. And then September 24th, that embarrassing beatdown seems like years ago against Arsenal, just his sixth Premier League game. He unfurled that 3-4-3 system and then just sprinted away from the pack like a Tour de France cycler, reaching the mountains, doing a solo breakaway, confident in his leg strength, knowing he was never going to get reeled back in. 26 Premier League wins so far, dominating all comers, scoring freely. And I tried to break down, like, how did he create this sense of bounce-back ability? What were the steps?
Well,
and the first was, for me, it was the clear, organised schedule, the no Champions League. But beyond that, I tried to think of three or four. What comes to your mind?
Well, I mean, I think at that press conference where after that 3-0 loss, it's interesting that he called out the players, called them out in a way that they're rarely called out by their manager, not in a vindictive way, not in a sullen way, but really a way of saying, like, however good we are on paper, we're just not that good in reality. We look really good on paper, but you know what? We're not that good in reality. He called his players to task for collective responsibility. He very rarely this season highlighted individuals. He was always talking about the collective. And I think he got a buy-in into a collective responsibility. And what he talked about, you know, after the win and after winning the league, is he talked about the idea that his ideas were not represented in the team earlier in the season. These weren't his players. They weren't playing to his formation. And Antonio Conte, and this is where I really respect it, I really relate to it as a creative person, he wanted, and as somebody who's built a company based on the way I want it to be, he's built a team based
also
on his
in the
own
3-4-3 formation.
Yeah, by the way, I'm laboring to get there. I don't have good enough wingbacks. I don't have my Moses, don't have my Alonso. He built something based on his ideas, and to build something based on your ideas, people have to buy into your ideas. And these guys bought into his idea. And that doesn't always happen. And because, despite his problems in English, he is a communicator. He's a communicator. He's detail-obsessed. He works all the time. He loves them. What I felt was remarkable, there were some odd parts of that celebration. But what was quite remarkable is it's so clear how much those players, more than just admire him, more than just like him, they really sort of love him. It's a very touchy-feely, physical, close relationship. Might not last forever. That could burn out in the same way that, you know, Mourinho's relationships burn out, but there's just a lot of love there.
I love love. And I do also admire Antonio Conte. I mean, one of the things he's done, which is fascinating, he's taken a team, Chelsea, and created them in an image which is joyful, not arrogant. And this is the Chelsea team that is actually, Dave, and I say this as the greatest tribute, not hateable, not exactly truly likable.
Mm-hmm.
But with Conte, good vibes, David Luiz, and N'Golo Kante at the heart of this team, and not Mourinho and John Terry. They're just not hateable, which is an astonishing feat in its
Dave,
own regard.
Super nice people.
But, I mean, it is, for me, a total leadership feat. I mean, there was like Jack Welch, but for real. And thinking about how he did it, going through the steps, I mean, I've tried to think about, number one, the addition of N'Golo Kante, who's kind of become football's equivalent of the Ark of the Covenant. If you yield that, you have power amongst all who possess it. After the Watford game, a fan gave Antonio a crown, beautiful crown actually, and Conte felt compelled and arguably rightly just marched over to Kante and plopped it on his head. The intensity of pre-season training, which we talked about at the time, you loved the pre-season training.
Yeah, I loved it.
You said punish those.
Yeah, punish them. I didn't want them to win, I just wanted them to be punished.
You're like, punish them, they deserve it. And it was a punishing regimen, which instituted a work ethic and the fitness, which meant that, this is astonishing, the last time Chelsea leaked a late goal to let points slip was September the 11th against Swansea. They were fitter, than all comers. He did it with his tactics, not just a 3-4-3, or the immaculate ability to nutmeg Brad Guzan, or the ability to know when to unleash Cesc for maximum damage. But he talked about the 3-4-3, and he talked about it beautifully. He said, it's not so easy to just change and win your games. A lot of teams try and do it, but we picked it up very well. He said, I found the strength to change. I took responsibility, and it was the key moment for us because, and I love this, Dave, he said, every single player found in themselves the best of themselves. I mean, it's almost as if he said to his players, this is not just about you as footballers. This is about you as human beings, which I love and admire.
Cesc is a great example. I mean, I think for much of the season, many observers felt that, oh, he's in trouble with Cesc. Oh, Cesc, he doesn't like Cesc. Cesc is going to go. Cesc is doing that. And Cesc might still leave. But Cesc actually, he bought into this role. He became a really key part, especially of the final third of the season. Cesc contributed. He started more games. He came off the bench. And Cesc coming in when a team has been beaten down, when they're getting a little exhausted, and his ability to find those passes, to find those lanes, and to just like hit those balls in, phew, fantastic.
And that was all part of the mentality that he instilled with his leadership. I mean, Andrea Pirlo once said, when Conte speaks, his words assault you, which is probably the opposite of me. But I still admire it greatly. I think it was probably best crystallized the whole will to win that he brings from that now infamous story of the holiday gifts that he gave every Chelsea member of staff. Gave them a bottle of Barello or a bottle of Prosecco and that handwritten note with a quote from Hannibal. Hannibal, the spreader of great Christmas cheer. The Carthaginian warrior. Bet you he loved Christmas. He said, he's a guy who once led his elephants across the Alps and the message was, we will either find a way or we will make one, which is truly an amazing way to approach life. And in this Premier League season, it was a winning one, David.
Yeah, absolutely. And played beautiful football. You know, I think people have become very attuned to using words for Chelsea, you know, solidity, resolution, fitness, backbone, all those things. But the reality is Chelsea have scored more goals than any other team in the Premier League this
love
season.
That.
And Chelsea have played some sparkling football. You know, they've been throwing shapes that other people... Who else has a player who just runs backwards away from goal in order to set up goal-scoring opportunities more than Pedro? I love it. I love watching them play football. I think for me, the kind of football I like watching, Chelsea are, by coincidence, now playing. It definitely has a spine. It definitely has some steel to it. But it's beautiful to watch. Their speed, their ability to adapt, how well their set pieces are worked. You look at their corners. You look at some of their set pieces. Just what they try, their imagination. It's really been a wonderful thing to
watch.
They
remind me of Bruce Arena's US team at the 2018 World Cup. I did love how Conte made it clear his team should celebrate, but then immediately reset their focus on the FA Cup final fast upcoming. To do the double in your first season in English football. I mean, if he does that, and I know you're listening, Antonio, part of me thinks you should just go to Inter Milan and not just use that as leverage in your contract negotiations, as I believe you're doing, in order to become the best paid Chelsea manager of all time, because you will never be able to top the feat of this season. Conte should just come in, conquer all, and then drop the mic and leave.
That's what Hannibal did.
With only the cloud of Cologne and the memories left, and probably the elephant droppings.
Yeah.
Just leave it to form a legacy that can never be tarnished Ranieri style. He will stay. Chelsea will spend up to $300 million on a new spine in over the summer. They will be a force. There will be no wilting on Conte's watch.
Yeah, I mean, this was a $20 million net spend that won the title because it's a very good transfer dealing this year. And I think that they are going to lose some players. It's definitely someone's going to go, whether it's Hazard going to one of the bigs in Spain, you know, Cesc, you know, maybe going to Italy. Diego, yes, perhaps to Shanghai. We'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens. And he's going to need to spend some money this season to compete. I believe that the prize for him next season, this is a man who's never won the Champions League. And that, I think, is going to be where he wants to go.
Oh, thank you to GFOP at Miles Pike, who tweeted a moral of Chelsea season I think he hoped would cheer me up. It's one I do love. He said, Chelsea. Just a Cinderella story ranch. Small, 10th place, a middling squad, rises to the top and is crowned kings. Should be easy for Everton next year. Every fan of every team should believe.
Okay, Rog, to the team that so nearly unseated Chelsea. Everton. Probably the only other team that deserve to take a lot of credit from this Premier League season.
Not Everton.
No, not Everton. Tottenham, Rog. They played Man United at home. This was the great banana skin that people saw happening to Tottenham late in the season. By the time it kicked off, it didn't matter. They beat Man United 2-1. They say farewell in the process to one of English football's most storied grounds, in style, one should say, seeing off a Man United side with one eye on the upcoming Europa League final.
More eyes.
A thumping Victor Wanyama header and a clever flick from who else? Harry Kane sent the Spurs faithful into a frenzy at White Hart Lane one final time.
Oh, farewell, White Hart Lane. End of a 118-year history that began September 4th, 1899. I was born 10 days later. I loved watching football there. I just thought it was wonderfully atmospheric, old school. Got many fond memories of watching Everton lose there, David.
No, Tottenham is a fantastic ground. I've been there about three or four times, and not in the modern era. I mean, I'm not in the Premier League era. I went there in the old First Division era. You used to watch Steve Archibald. I remember Steve Archibald almost being able to touch him, making a throw-in. Back when
He was a raggedy little Scottish forward. He was fantastic.
Yeah, back when they wore the really, really, really dark blue shorts.
They
I love that
stuff. Fantastic kits always in that era.
They do have the best logo in football. I really do believe that Lecoq is the best logo in football.
Oh, I could not agree with you more. I mean, they always had a stylish jersey. When they did the Lecoq Sportif jerseys in the 80s, my God, they were flamboyant. And it matched their football, David. This was a stadium which has seen great seasons of triumph in the 1960s. Flamboyance, it is the right word for them. Shattered dreams, always never far away from that flamboyance in the 90s and the early 2000s. And it all ended on Sunday. Cue a lot of sporadic gantry talk and nostalgia from Arlo White and Lee Dixon. I think making this game feel more of an exhibition and a celebration than ever was Mourinho. And I, on the fast upcoming Europa League final, more on that in a moment, fielded a weakened team again. At the moment, he said, the Premier League matches are the ones we do not want to play. I mean, it's mind-blowing. Must have thrilled the Premier League powers that be to no end. And also the United fans that travelled up for the game, spent their money to come and cheer them. He's really entered the season like a kid up turning a Monopoly board the minute
players,
you drop a hotel on Boardwalk and he realises the game's over.
And the players he's played, who now really understand what their manager thinks of them.
That's why Wayne Rooney dusted off and pressed into emergency service once again in that tunnel. He just stared straight ahead without blinking for about 3 minutes before kickoff. My son asked me if he was rebooting. The game was a tale of two teams. One, Spurs, well-drilled, who derived true joy from their collective shape and movement. The other, Manchester United, who, in the words of former Everton midfielder turned pundit Don Hutchinson, his quote, he said, United, they're all over the gaff. Spurs had chance after chance. It was only the flailing De Gea. It was like Samuel Tarly with Dragon Glass keeping the whites at bay. But what an atmosphere, mate. We are Tottenham, super Tottenham. We are Tottenham from the lane, bellowed the Spurs faithful. They scored twice, Wanyama, then Harry Kane with his delicious flick. It was all like watching Tottenham playing their greatest hits, David, like James Taylor and Furling Fire and Rain live in concert.
Whatever squad Mourinho put out there to go and play against them, this must have been a severe letdown for them with what happened at the Hawthorns on Friday night. This was a title that the way this team played in the back third of the season. These 9 wins on the trot as the season is drawing to its climax, just constantly putting pressure on Chelsea. It was a remarkable achievement. You just felt like there was going to be a letdown. And what was impressive to me is that there just wasn't.
I mean, the Spurs fans made sure there wasn't, David. They just resummoned songs for legends past, like your beloved Steve Archibald, Paul Gascoigne.
Archibald.
Jermaine Defoe. Those names rang around White Hart Lane once. In a beautiful moment, I have to say this as an Everton fan, they cheered for Aaron Lennon, who now plays for the Blues, is currently recovering from his stress-related challenges. A moment of true class from everyone involved in Tottenham Hotspur. Got to ask you, who are your 3 best Spurs players of all time to take the field at White Hart Lane?
Gascoigne, you know, the player that was missing from the ceremony. God. I saw Gascoigne play there and he was just unbelievable.
YouTuber, many of you who don't recognise the name.
David Ginola. Came in, beautiful hair, beautiful man.
Hair and shoulders.
Played with a sort of a panache and a style no one else have. You know, I love the Argentinians. They were amazing. I love...
Diles and Villa.
you know, got a shout out to Jürgen for what he did. But I've really got to go to another player that I loved watching play football, Chris Waddle. Look at him, a mulleted, you know, Geordie from the Northeast, who could drop the shoulder, had sort of silky hips. He had moves, scored some amazing goals. I love watching him play football too.
Here's mine. Okay. You ready?
Go.
Number one.
Yeah.
Brad Friedel. Number two.
I think I know what the pattern may be.
Clint Dempsey.
Yeah.
And number three, I know everyone out there's agreeing with me, particularly English Spurs fans. You're shouting already. You don't need me to say it. Yeah. DeAndre Yedlin. Huge gap. And then Paul Gascoigne, Jimmy Greaves and Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
Probably bringing up the rear. And then DeAndre Yedlin again. Jimmy Carl Vickers.
Oh, Sol Campbell. So many good players. Ledley King.
Amazing man.
Yeah.
Great friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Oh, and so it ended 2-1. Spurs finish in unbelievable 17 home win season, undefeated at White Hart Lane. Symbol of just how incredible they've been under Pochettino. 150 points over the last two seasons, 10 more than any other team. Third place and a second place finish. One of the greatest teams, I'd say, in Premier League history not to win the title, akin to Liverpool 2014. Probably our best hope to unite with Jon Snow and fend off the White Walkers. But, wow, White Hart Lane. It's been the bedrock of their campaign, a bedrock that they're going to lose next season, David, as they head off to Wembley, scene of this season's lacklustre performances in the Champions League, the Europa League, and that 4-2 FA Cup semi-final defeat to Chelsea. It's going to be different next year.
It is going to be different. It's going to be different. I hope they've learned from all of that this season. You know, watching that ceremony that they had after the game. I wish that all Premier League teams, I wish that we had a Hall of Fame in the Premier League, frankly, so that we could salute these great players who made the Premier League what it is.
It was done with class, David.
It was done with class.
I mean, they had to restore order. They really, right at the final whistle, thousands of Spurs fans stormed the field, surrounded the players who had to be dragged off by security bouncers. It always just reminded me of Wellington's quote about his troops when he said, "I don't know what effect these men will have on the enemy, but by God, they terrify me." But once they got these guys off the field, it was just songs. It was joy. It was 48 Spurs legends, somewhat arbitrary. No Paul Gascoigne, sadly. No Jurgen Klinsmann, no Lineker, no Bale. But at a closing event of class and dignity, David, it created the impression of order, of strategy, even though, I mean, as Arsenal going into the Emirates, West Ham into London Stadium have shown, the leap into a new stadium, it really is a leap into the unknown.
Yeah, yeah. But I think we all wish Tottenham well. You and I, we both have sympathies for this team. I am very fond of Tottenham, and I want to see them do well this season. I want this group of young English players particularly to have a very good season next year.
Most striking part of the whole thing was watching Mauricio Pochettino. And just seeing how much it impacted him. He's clearly emotionally connected to the club, its history, and the nature of the opportunity to bring trophies to an organisation that has been title-starved since 1961. Not just winning, but writing his name into history forever. Not every player on the squad is going to be so collectively motivated. The big teams are going to be sniffing around Eric Dier, Kyle Walker, offering huge pay bumps. And I think we said this the past couple of weeks, Spurs' ability to hang on to them for another season will determine whether third time will be a charm. Word on United, David. Their consolation goal, Wayne Rooney jabbed it home, was their first on the road all season against the Big Six. Symbol of just how big the gap's been and potentially how far they have to go. Europa League has been like an escape pod for a baddie in a James Bond movie to blast off in as his lair is self-destructing. And my God, Mourinho knows it. With a straight face, he called that semi-final against Celta Vigo, the Galicians of Spain, who are currently applauding 12th in La Liga. He called it before the game, the most important match in our history. They won it, Dave. They won it. They battened the hatches. They snuck rather than marched into the final. Celta Vigo had 67% possession at Old Trafford. They wandered a shot from point-blank range in the last seconds that would have eliminated United. But they will march on. I mean, bullet dodged to face Ajax. Dashing, reborn, slightly naive, catchable on the counter Ajax in the final in Sweden, May 24th. Really a pivotal moment in United's rebirth, symbolic of either a return to greatness or the continuing bog of the post-Ferguson mire.
And talking of Spurs, just before this pod, you spoke with 21-year-old English star Dele about Spurs' season, his affinity for nutmegs, and his favourite NFL team. We're releasing that as a pod special on Thursday.
Yeah, I asked him whether he thought Eric Dier could play in the NFL.
Yeah, what did and he say?
He just says, no, he's too slow.
Now to the race for the top four, Rog, where three teams are fighting for the final two spots. And at the time of recording, Arsenal are showing strong returns in Michigan, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. They're about to kick off against Sunderland as we pod, but we want to go back to Saturday when Arsene Wenger's side beat Stoke 4-1.
Premier League writers, they don't sleep, David. Sending them to the Bet365.
With the lowercase b.
On Saturday evening, where they hadn't won since 2010. Barely scored a goal, always got a good kick in. They came out with what's referred to as sterile domination. They owned the ball, but not in areas that could hurt Stoke. One of the major first half highlights was the protest plane yanking the banner, shouting, "Wenger, out means out!" Which I'm guessing was flown by Arsenal's chief executive, Ivan Gazidis, who reportedly wants to limit Wenger's power, instilling a director of football to partner him with. Bit of a civil war waging behind the scenes, with Gazidis potentially, this is fascinating, being elbowed out to succeed Don Garber at MLS. Watch this space.
Used to work there. Gazidis used to work at MLS.
Yeah, God, can you imagine if Wenger lost the battle and he had to run MLS?
Exactly.
That would be exactly what MLS needs, someone who's fiscally responsible. Yeah. Arsenal did run rampant once Xhaka carved an exquisite pass to Bellerin, slapped it across to Olivier Giroud, stabbed it home from Batshuayi range. 15 goals this season, David, in which he's been far from a fixture, but always, always erotic. And it hit me as that ball rolled in, David. I suddenly realised Arsene Wenger is going to outlive us all. And he's going to remain Arsenal manager till his dying day, isn't he?
Yeah, maybe longer.
Yeah, at Mark Fine says, yeah, he's the Bear Bryant of the Premier League. I thought about Bear Bryant, who once said, "Losing doesn't make me want to quit. It makes me want to fight that much harder," which is true, true, Arsene. You had Sanchez and Ozil combining for a beautiful goal. Amazing give and go. The go being Sanchez taking out five Stoke defenders with a pass. "Never leave us, Meza. Never leave us, Alexis. Never leave us, Arsene." And the cameras cut to Wenger on the sideline. He gave this little hop, this little skip of giddy delight, the kind grandmama does in fairy tales when she sees Red Riding Hood emerge from the forest unscathed. It was the skip of a man who's going nowhere, right, David?
Who knows? No idea. Don't know what's in his mind. Don't know what's in the mind of the Arsenal board. Not even sure the Arsenal board are meeting.
I'm still recovering from Hank Azaria guesting on our show doing his Arsene Wenger impression.
That extreme joy from him is looks the same.
You know him so well.
Okay.
His wife, when he in the moment of climax, like, oh, that felt good.
Okay.
It was a good one.
Okay.
Your mouth.
That Arsenal result, Rog, meant that Liverpool needed to win at West Ham to remain in control of their own top four. Destiny, destiny, destiny. And they did so convincingly, thumping a listless West Ham side 4-0. Goals from Daniel Sturridge, Rog.
Remember him?
Yeah, two from Coutinho.
He's
and
back.
Divock Origi leave Liverpool one win away from Champions League football.
Yeah, they had to win to maintain that Champions League charge, and they did. Turned out to be a bit of a sleepy stroll in the sun for Liverpool. From the moment Sturridge gave West Ham backline the Jimmy Dolan shake and bake, his first goal since January the 2nd. Perhaps the most English thing of all time. West Ham raised their game 1 week to destroy Spurs' hope. They're loaded again the very next to destroy Arsenal's. Less football, Davo. More banter.
Yeah, what an odd season for West Ham, Rog. Capable of playing still great football, some great individual players. A very, very good Premier League manager, I believe, in Slaven Bilic. I thought they could have contended this year.
We all did. That's what was amazing to me in listening to it again. We had to talk about West Ham as real Champions League top four contenders ahead of this season. That's how they were perceived back then. On this upswing, new stadium, the players, they've kept them all, they've added. They've become also-rans. I mean, a lesson, the move to London Stadium that was meant to take them next level has instead become a disruptive force that's just undermined everything that was special about the club. Liverpool, their fans have lived every human emotion this season, from "nothing's going to stop us from winning the title" to more kind of carrier's tinge. Please God, let us scrape into the top four. If they win their last game, they'll get the latter. It will be richly deserved. But then again, that final game of the season, Davo, against Middlesbrough. Just the kind of team they've slipped up against all season. And just one man stands between the Reds and their Champions League dreams, Brad Guzan. He might have the game of his life He may close that five-hole. He's min man.
He may be wearing MC Hammer pants in the next game. I think it would be a smart thing.
Yeah, I'm going to mail this onesie to Brad. Honestly, I can't feel my nipples anymore either. It's creeping upwards.
The final team in the trinity of top four contenders, Rog, Man City. They defeated Leicester 2-1 at the Etihad thanks to a somewhat dodgy David Silva goal that featured Raz attempting to play the ball from an extremely offside position and a Jesus penalty, Rog.
Yeah, it was a crazy game. It was really a microcosm of the Pep Guardiola era. City's entire season stuffed into 99 minutes of play. His team just loaded with talent, capable of imperious dominance, but then also capable of irrationally, randomly switching off completely, letting the other team back into it, ultimately just scraping by with a hefty dose of luck. Leicester were hemmed in. Gabriel Jesus got his fifth goal in six starts. He's really the Brazilian Iheanacho. But then Leicester, 2-0 down, got back into it with an Okazaki screamer. Okazaki,
that
evolved.
Was a wonderful goal.
And then the Foxes almost grabbed the point in surreal circumstances. Mahrez won a penalty, converted it, but was then judged to have slipped while he was taking it, and his planting foot just nicked the ball. Two touches, not allowed, and the referee correctly overruled. I think it was Bobby Madley. Overruled it as a double hit. God, I thought how Arsenal fans must have been momentarily throbbing with joy waiting for City to wobble. As it is, he's left with his bipolar team like a guy that is in treatment saying, they've given me a second chance at Manchester City and I'll try and do it. Oddly, apathetically saying that he would have been fired if he was at a, quote, bigger team like Barcelona or Bayern Munich. It's so odd, Davo. Just his whole approach to everything, just letting it all out there. Who knows?
I mean, you're right. Odd thing to say, strange thing to say. It's been a very weird season for Pep. Having said that, they're strolling into the Champions League again, Rog. But he just wins some games next year. He starts the year well. Everything will be forgiven. Oh, he learned his lesson. He'll say, I didn't necessarily learn. Nobody will throw his words back at him. It doesn't matter. As long as he's finding a way to win, he'll be fine in football.
It's just narrative.
Yeah, very, very true. Okay, at the time of recording, Liverpool are third on 73 points. Wins Sunday against Borough, and they finish top four. City are fourth on 72 points. Wins against West Brom this afternoon and Watford Sunday would vault them into third. And Arsenal are fifth on 69 points. They basically have to win this afternoon against Sunderland and Sunday against Everton and hope for a slip from Liverpool and or City.
Entirely possible.
Okay, Rog, down the other end of the table, the nether regions. We entered the weekend with three teams left on the American Ninja Warrior course that is the relegation zone. Palace, Swansea and Hull City. Saturday morning, the Swans visited bedraggled, already relegated Sunderland and won 2-0 thanks to the ever-predictable Fernando Llorente header and an absolute thumper from Carl Norton, Rog. That Swansea result was followed by Crystal Palace's 4-0 win over Hull Sunday morning, meaning the Tigers will join Middlesbrough and Sunderland in the Championship next season. And GFOP Steve Parrish, he has achieved safety this season.
Oh, God, I've got to say, Sigurdsson to Llorente, the Welsh equivalent of Steve Young to Jerry Rice. League-leading six goals have come from that combo. 14th goal for Llorente, 7th off his meaty Pamplonan forehead.
Sign them, Everton. Sign them.
God, Sigurdsson, who is rumoured, I've got to say, he's been involved in 21 of Swansea's 43 goals, 13 assists, 9 struck off his own foot. He's like the Ernie Banks of Swansea. I was trying to think of a player who is more phenomenal on a more woeful team. I mean, he's never stopped trying to excel. It's like Ernie Banks was Mr. Cub, Gylfi is Mr. Swan, or I guess Mr. Svan, as they'd say in the Lando Ice. Hull had to win to keep Palace alive. Tall order. They didn't even record a shot on goal. It was an amazing game. It really just became a jump cut of delirious Big Sam Allardyce sideline shots. I'm pretty sure, I've watched the game three times, I'm pretty sure Big Sam was on an acid trip during this game day. He was just hugging, pouring, kissing at his coaching assistants as if he was hallucinating that they were made of pie. Poor Marco Silva on the other sideline. He was there, but not there. He was totally disinterested. He was like someone who decided to break up with their partner, but just hadn't had the nerve to tell them yet. I mean, his whole tumble out the moon door. Marco will not be falling with them. Everyone's talking about, he's going to go places, this guy. He's going to do great things. He's going to walk away from the wreckage totally unscathed with his reputation actually heightened. Choice of suitors now. What I don't understand is Paul Clement, who's done a similar cultural transformation job at Swansea, actually done so successfully, potentially because he's English, fewer tipping him to be the next big thing?
I'd like to see Paul Clement stay. I'd like to see Marco get a chance somewhere else. I worry about Swansea, though, even if they stay up. If they're going to lose Sigurdsson, that would be a tough, tough loss for them. And he seems to have announced to the world that he doesn't want to stay there anymore.
Hull are now gone. Philip Larkin, my favourite poet, lived out his life there because it was so remote and obscure. Two of his lines came to me. Life is slow dying. And then his other beauty, what will survive of us is love. For Hull fans, my advice on relegation comes from the Billions character Dollar Bill, who told Axe what to do to prepare when you know you're about to be arrested. He said, eat something beforehand, find time to use the bathroom, and look for a guard to bribe. The basics. And so Swansea will stay up. So let's say big belated thanks to Bob Bradley. Those 3 points he won in that 5-4 win against Palace.
Yeah, that was it.
That was a difference maker.
Yeah, it was.
Bob gave his Premier League life so that others could live.
Underrated. Underrated as a Premier League manager, Rog. Now to an American who has fared only slightly better than Bob this season. Middlesbrough 1, Southampton 2. Mr. Bradley Edwin Guzan Esquire's English football farewell tour continues in slightly less than optimal fashion.
Yeah, and one of the most savage moments of the season. Poor Brad Guzan gave away a penalty in the 63rd minute, causing the Middlesbrough fans to break out in a chant. J-Dubs is laughing at this. This breaks my heart. The Middlesbrough fans broke out in a chant of off, 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 urging referee Anthony Taylor to send Guzzi off, their own goalkeeper. He's mint man.
He's mint man. Bournemouth 2, Burnley 1. The Cherries guarantee the highest ever league finish in 118 years. An 85th minute winner from Josh King. Wow, his 16th goal of the season and 12th in his last 14 appearances have the Cherries in the top half of the table at the time of recording. Everton 1, Watford 0, Rog, well done. Ross Barkley is all the talk around Goodison at the moment, and not just because of his second half winner in this game last Friday, Rog.
Yeah, but the headline that terrifies me is United want Everton striker Romelu Lukaku and will offer former Toffees forward Wayne Rooney as part of the deal. But I got to say, poor Wayne, it's been one of the single saddest storylines of the season watching his decline at United. Right now, his hair recedes faster than he runs at this point. Mm. And this whole dalliance with Wayne Rooney and Everton's fans, it's like when you hear of someone who's married and then they fall back in love with a teen boyfriend or girlfriend after re-engaging with them via Facebook. It's just nostalgia, memories, false hope, and really the sadness of your present day life leading you to just over-romanticise middle age and impending death. Don't do it.
Ross Barkley, how do you feel about that?
Love the money. Love money. Take it.
Okay, two Togger winners to announce for game week 36. The high score came from Togger's head of content, a man who has been a guest on multiple fantasy pods here in the crap part of Soho, Mr. John Wallin. For those of you who believe Togger is rigged, we kindly refer you to Roger's score.
That's a cold cut.
The second winner we have to announce this week is for our 1 week suboptimal 11 contest. We asked GFOPs to pick their worst fantasy team with the caveat that each member of their 11 must play at least 1 minute.
He's winner, mint man.
Chad Oakley, who registered just 36 points with Brad Guzan in goal. Congrats on the crapness of patches on the way.
I love you, Brad. I'm just going to start you this weekend.
The final is now set, Rog.
Game of your life.
In the Champions League, Juventus won their second semi-final leg against Monaco 2-1 in Turin last week to comfortably advance 4-1 on aggregate. In the other semi-final, Real Madrid experienced a mild case of tight sphincter when Atletico went 2-0 up just 60 minutes into the game
right
to make it 3-2 on aggregate. But an Isco away goal just before the stroke of halftime effectively extinguished it.
Broke my heart, mate. Atleti, such a proud, stubborn club. 3-0 down from the first leg. Their fans bellowing in their cauldron of a stadium and filling a tifo that might just become the name of my autobiography. We're proud not to be like you. They pulled back two goals. They were within one. And then they conceded in the most feeble, exhausted way. Road goal for Real Madrid, which meant thanks to away goals, Atleti had to score three times again. And they just settled for kicking random Real players for the rest of the game.
For the sheer joy of it.
All credit to Real Madrid. They're reaching their third Champions League final in 4 years. It's truly an unbelievable feat. I do believe, though, Juventus, technically superb, clinical, smothering Juventus. They're going to do them in the final in Cardiff, Saturday, June 3rd.
Okay, Rog, get your electric guitar out. It's time for MLS. To Toronto FC extended their club record winning streak to 6 games Saturday, beating Minnesota 3-2 to move 6 points clear atop the Eastern Conference. Meanwhile, LA Galaxy ended New York Red Bull's 13-month league home unbeaten streak, and Chicago saw off Seattle 4-1. In other bigly news for America, the FIFA Congress, in its esteemed brilliance, meeting in Bahrain.
Yes, now we think it's
That's not a junket.
Our position has changed.
Yes,
on FIFA.
Our position has changed. They're brilliant. They're really amazing. Misunderstood. They met in Bahrain, Rog, because where else would you meet?
Democracy.
They approved a fast-track plan for awarding 2026 World Cup hosting rights. The US-led bid is a clear favourite. Other nations have 3 months to come up with the money. Sorry, to identify this.
Storyline I found interesting is that with news swirling about the proposed border wall impacting the US and Mexico and our great partnership for the World Cup hosting, and also the uncertainty of the travel ban, the leaders of the US bid are hoping, quote, to arrange a meeting and photo opportunity with FIFA representatives and President Trump in the next 2 months. It made me realise one upside to the current US political chaos is that America is now sufficiently politically tumultuous to attract the interest of FIFA.
We're so FIFA-y.
Yeah, we are now. We were far too stable when we wanted to try and win 18 and 22 and it went to Russia and Qatar. No longer, Dave. We're exactly what they're looking for.
We are FIFA-y.
Three quick stories from the women's game.
Number one.
Catalonian giants Barcelona have announced they'll be the first European team to launch a club in the US National Women's Soccer League, starting in 2018. It's a partially a brand play, but it's a fascinating one nonetheless.
Number two.
Oh, big mazel tov, Carly Lloyd and Manchester City. Carly heading home the third of City's 4 goals in a 4-1 FA Cup triumph over Birmingham City at Wembley. Oh, must have felt like a dream before an amazing crowd this, 30,271.
Number three.
The US women's national team will face Australia, Brazil and Japan in a 4-team tournament of nations to be played in Seattle, San Diego and LA this summer. Mm. Oh, Tournament of Nations, not a bad name, but New York Times editor Andrew Das couldn't believe that the better name, or maybe the worst better name, would be the She Still Believes Cup.
Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet Philosopher Soccer Scribe Raven of the Week is Jeff Perella, Rog. I'm getting married in the fall, this is Jeff speaking, not me, and have to select a cake topper. However, every lovely couple, every lovely couple that would sit atop our cake boasts a groom with a full shock of hair and not at all representative of my shiny topped self. I have sported a horseshoe hairstyle since my 24th year, and it feels wrong to misrepresent my handsomeness with a miniature, fully haired figurine. I think it's vulgar. I've found figurines with all colours and lengths of hairstyles. There are varying facial expressions and action poses, yet none, not one, that simply shares the same barber as me. I ask you this. Are bald men forbidden to marry? Should I be punished for genetics? I take pride in my lack of cranial coverage and hope that you and your listeners can help. Do you have any recommendations for a cake topper that does bald men justice and ensures guests and my bride can identify they're eating the correct cake? I won't hold out for a figure also donning a Metro Stars jersey. My future wife might forbid it, but I'm open to any ideas.
Simple, this one. Snap off the groom on the topper that you have. Just snap him off. The one that no doubt looks like Ryan Bloody Seacrest. And do what I did. Just get yourself a John Joe Shelby action figure and make it stand in for you on that wedding cake. I guarantee you, years of happiness will follow. Dare to John Joe. It's just a credo to live by on and off the field.
Very true. Your weekend looks like this, Rog. All 10 Premier League games kick off at 10 a.m. on Sunday. The games will be on the NBC family of networks. No word yet on which games will be on which channel. Check your local listings as we get closer to the weekend. Following NBC's coverage, it's the season finale of our crap show. Set your DVRs from 12 p.m.
After
Sunday.
All of that feast of football, I don't know which game to choose.
Until midnight, just to be safe. And in MLS, Minnesota host LA Galaxy at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. Orlando City versus New York City follows at 7 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. Okay, Rog, we just mentioned the Men in Blazers television show, a half hour of TV that has roughly as many redeeming qualities as we have hairs atop our bald heads. I'm way less bald in person. One of the few reasons to watch the shirtage and ties that we wear courtesy of Thomas Pink. Now, the team from Jermyn Street, London, that's somewhere between the Emirates and Stamford Bridge, Rog, are offering GFOPs a special deal. If you buy one Thomas Pink shirt, you will get a complimentary tie. It's like buying a Christian Benteke and getting a Jonathan Benteke for nothing at all. All you have to do is use the promo code GFOP, either in-store or online, when making your purchase, and you'll be all set. A link to the offer is on our website under the Thomas Pink giveaway tab. Make sure to click on the one that says, as mentioned on pod. Courage. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, find as big as mortal, stick off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage. Allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog? Is it a book?
It's a book.
Wow.
Every Night I Dream of Hell by Malcolm Mackay, author of the amazing, really, really, if you've not got it, must-read Glasgow trilogy, of which I've spoken before, Tot Noir, grim, paranoid, low-rent world of Glasgow's mob underworld. This one picks up on a character from the earlier books, mid-level enforcer, or as they call him, security consultant, whose inner monologue is pretty close to how I imagine Stevie Naismith to be, as he tries to outrun both the changing political currents that are transforming Glasgow gang life and his own psychological trauma, which he struggles to repress. The character, not Stevie Naismith, Davo. This, like all of Mackay's work, is just a total hard-boiled treat. Such a taut psychological writer. It's a total delight for anyone who'd love a guilty pleasure.
I'm back wearing golf shoes, Rog. I'd stop wearing time. Golf shoes. I'd started just wearing my Stan Smiths. Stan Smiths are a fantastic golf shoe. You don't need proper golf shoes. For years, the golf shoe industry has been just pulling the wool over everyone's eyes and selling golf shoes.
Stan Smith like the Tesla of the golf shoe
all
world.
You needed was Stan Smiths. However,
it's disruptive technology.
However, our friends at Adidas have got me back in golf shoes again with the Adidas Men's Adicross 5 golf spikeless shoe. Poor. I quite like the core black flower white combination.
Oh, you talk all the time about the core black white. I like the red combo.
It's about $49. They're very priced based on availability, but a fantastic shoe, incredibly comfortable. I walked 36 holes on one day this weekend and up and down the hills at the bridge, and the shoe was absolutely fantastic.
That shoe looks
presidential. You think it's a summer shoe, but Rog, it's not. You can wear it in the rain, you can wear it in the wind, and
formally
occasionally,
or informally,
as I found out, you can wear it in the deep rough. Okay, visit meninblazers.com to sign up for our newsletter, which we produce with our partner Guinness. Our season-ending issue goes out this Friday. Follow us on Twitter at meninblazers, at Embassy Davies, at Rush Bennett, on Instagram at meninblazers, at Embassy _ Davies, on Facebook, meninblazers. Send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Matombo?
Explosion.
Balls win.
Take that, Gloria.
Balls lose.
To see a sucker.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung fu fighting. America, from the bottom of my heart, they
take the smile off your face.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.